welcome to the Domestic Fuel Cast, a podcast devoted to news and information about alternative fuels and energy, produced and hosted by Zimcom New Media.
Those in the heartland hold their own hearing on the EPA's biofuels proposal. I'm John Davis reporting. The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed to cut the amount of ethanol and biodiesel going into the country's fuel supply, significant decreases in what the nation's biofuel makers have already and would be able to produce. During a recently completed comment period, the EPA received thousands of comments on the proposed changes to the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, including many from ethanol and biodiesel advocates, and even got an earful at the agency's one field hearing, which wasn't held very far out in the field or near where these biofuels are chiefly produced, listening to those only who could make the trip to just across the river from Washington, D.C. Iowa Governor Terry Branstad, whose state is a leader in ethanol and biodiesel production, after making his own impassioned plea near the nation's capital, tried to get the agency to come to the Midwest, in the heart of where the fuels and the primary feedstocks for these fuels are produced. But the EPA wouldn't come, so he held his own hearing in the heartland in Des Moines.
Since the EPA proposal was released, there has been a strong bipartisan opposition from throughout the agricultural heartland of America. I was one of several Midwesterners who traveled to Arlington, Virginia to testify at the EPA's only hearing on this RFS proposal. We asked for one here, right at ground zero in the heartland, and they choose not to do it. That's why we're having this on our own, because we want the message to get across. When we were there, a delegation from here met with EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy to reaffirm our feelings about the negative impact that the administration's proposed rule would have on job creation, agriculture, the environment, and rural America.
Iowa Congressman Tom Latham chided the Obama administration for not coming to the Midwest to hear from those directly affected by this proposal.
As you know, the entire Iowa congressional delegation has joined the governor to request that EPA come to Iowa for this field hearing. However, the administration seems to think that the most appropriate venue to have a field hearing on their flawed decision to restrict the use of renewable fuels was actually within the Beltway, just miles from the White House. I believe a better way to decide public policy is to look to the people of the Midwest directly in the eye and listen to the actual real-life impacts that this unfortunate and misguided proposal will have on rural America.
Andy views the EPA proposal as a step in the wrong direction.
This decision is a step backward for the environment, a step backward for rural economic development, a step backward for lower prices at the pump, a step backward for the Midwest corn growers, a step backward for our soybean producers. And if you spent more time in rural Iowa, the president might realize that if you take too many steps backwards in an Iowa pasture, without knowing why or where you're going, you may just step in something. And it's very unpleasant.
The Iowans at this hearing were joined by those from several other Midwest states, including Indiana's Lieutenant Governor Sue Elsperman, who also serves as that state's ag secretary and broke down the impact for farmers and biofuel producers in her state and the nation.
If the EPA proposal comes to pass, we've heard what will happen to corn prices. They will fall, possibly below the levels of the cost of production. If the price of corn drops to $3.50 a bushel, farmers and rural communities across the nation could lose over $10 billion. The production and use of biofuels that are grown and developed in the Hoosier Heartland boosts the state economy and helps break the nation's dependence on foreign oil. As a nation, it is absolutely vital that we increase our domestic energy supply, create efficiency standards for our automakers, and encourage the production of renewable fuels such as ethanol and biofuels.
And she echoed Latham's view that this is a step backwards.
This proposal is backtracking on the accomplishments made in the past 10 years. It hurts jobs. It hurts the economy. It hurts our nation's security and energy dependence. And it disproportionately hurts the heartland.
But it wasn't just politicians who took the stage in this hearing in the heartland. Experts such as Iowa State University's Dr. Bruce Babcock, who was well-versed in energy economics, tried to dismiss some myths swirling around biofuels. He believes the EPA is working under a couple of assumptions to even come up with this proposal. First, consumers won't use more than a 10% blend of ethanol in their vehicles.
Our first finding is that E85 is not a failed fuel as claimed by ethanol opponents. Consumption of E85 has been limited because its price has rarely been set at levels where it makes sense to use the fuel. EPA does not have to reduce mandates because consumers won't consume more ethanol. The owners of the 16 million flex fuel vehicles in the United States will fill up with E85 if it's priced right. And it will be priced right if EPA allows the RFS to continue as planned. We estimate that up to 800 million gallons of ethanol can be consumed in E85 with the existing vehicle fleet and the existing stations if E85 were priced to save drivers a bit of money. This level of consumption beyond E10 combined with banked RINs could meet a 14.4 billion gallon ethanol target, which is where the RFS would be without EPA's proposed reduction. Far higher levels of consumption would be immediately feasible with low-cost investments in new blender pumps and E85 stations, as long as they're located where the flex fuel vehicles are located. The belief that there is no market for ethanol beyond E10 is simply wrong.
And second, fuel prices will increase because of the RFS. He does admit that higher prices for renewable identification numbers could push the cost higher for oil companies, but that doesn't necessarily translate into a bigger hit for consumers' wallets.
So if you had an 11% blending percentage and a $1 RIN price, the cost increase to oil companies would be 11 cents per gallon. We estimate that maybe about 8 cents of this cost would find its way into higher wholesale gasoline prices. But this does not mean that the fuel price paid by consumers would go up by this 8 cents. Today, consumers don't consume pure gasoline. They consume mostly 10% ethanol, 90% gasoline. So, in fact, after you take into account the same economic force that the RIN price affects wholesale gasoline prices will actually reduce ethanol prices by more than the wholesale gasoline price increases. So we actually find that if the EPA decides to reverse its decision and increase mandates to where they were originally with the RFS, that E10 prices would actually decline by a small amount.
But outside of the politics and economics of the EPA's proposal, one hearing participant made it clear how this could cost human lives. Dr. Timothy Gibbons, a retired U.S. Army Reserves veteran from Mason City, Iowa, saw the price in blood and treasure firsthand when he worked as a doctor during the war in Iraq.
While in Iraq, I toured the entire country. I treated countless military, civilian contractors, Iraqi and foreign nationals for combat and non-combat related illnesses and injuries. In Iraq, I personally experienced the loneliness of mobilization, the camaraderie of soldiers, the hospitality of the Iraqi people. I witnessed the sacrifice of the American treasury, the sacrifice of individuals, some who gave all. In 2006, I was mobilized for the second time, Fort Wainwright, Alaska, providing treatment for soldiers in the theater of war, returning from the theater of war. In 2009, I returned to Iraq with the International Medical Corps to teach orthopedics to the Iraqi orthopedic surgeons. These life experiences have led me to a special insight in the importance of government policy. The Iraqi war was fought in part to keep the free flow of oil in the world. Ironically, the United States was not even a customer of Iraqi oil, and we were protecting the oil supplies of Europe, China, and Japan. Nearly 4,500 servicemen and women gave their lives in Iraq. 49 of these were from Iowa. The official wounded count is 3,200 military personnel. 338 of these were from Iowa. Oil has been subsidized in a way that's hard for economists to quantify. I'm here to tell you that we paid a higher price than what is seen at the pump. Administratively, modifying the law of the land in favor of multinational oil companies to me seems unconscionable. I believe the commander-in-chief and Congress should stand up for America in the way that the American military has. Allowing bureaucrats to change the law that has profoundly, possibly improved our national security is cowardly.
The comment period on this proposal is now closed, and it's expected that it could take several months just for the EPA to consider all the comments and render a final decision. In the meantime, Branstad reiterated his call for the president to think about the impact the decision might have.
I urge President Obama, Administrator McCarthy, and the EPA to listen to the people of Iowa and the agricultural heartland of America. The president launched his campaign for president right here and was a supporter of renewable fuels. We need his continued support of a robust and strong renewable fuel standard, just as the EPA has always done in the past. We're not asking them to change policy. We're asked to just stick with what's worked.
I'm John Davis reporting.
You've been listening to the Domestic Fuel Cast, the official podcast of DomesticFuel.com. Check out the website daily for the latest good news about the alternative energy industry.